We also have a large exploration position in South Central of prospects that have never been tapped into.
New possibilities for Cook Inlet Energy. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, the 18th of December. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a new safe house for abused women opens in Bethel.
Holy cow, they're brand new. The rooms are really nice and, wow, I can't believe it's becoming in reality.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a high-risk chronic medical condition or other uninsurable reasons, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. ACHIA was created by the state legislature to meet the needs of Alaskans, and several plans are available. Talk to an independent insurance broker. Information also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the ACHIA.
Federal hate crime charges have now been filed against an Anchorage couple who allegedly harassed a Native man downtown and then posted a video of it. APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
Already facing state assault charges, Robert Gumm and Deanna Powers are in deeper trouble now. A federal grand jury decided to charge them with harassing and assaulting Eddie Barr because of his race. This could lead to as much as a $10,000 fine and a year in prison if they're convicted. The incident took place last August. The two videotaped themselves harassing a man and posted it on YouTube. That's how they got caught. Barr subsequently said he forgives the two. He told police that he was frightened because it appeared that the fact that he is Eskimo was the reason he was attacked. Gumm is 19 and has a police record as a minor possessing alcohol. Powers is 20. The videos, since removed from YouTube, showed the two first harassing and threatening Barr from a car, then throwing things at him. At one point, as he's walking away, Powers shoved him, and when Barr offered to shake hands, Gumm accused him of approaching his sister. The racial epithets were clear and repeated. Somebody informed the police, and an investigator looked at the YouTube posts and tracked down the perpetrators. They were then charged in state court, and now it's a federal case. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
President Barack Obama today declared a major disaster for the Kodiak Island borough in the wake of October storms. The declaration will allow federal emergency management agency funds to come to the borough to help pay for the repair or replacement of facilities damaged by the flooding, mudslides, and rock slides. Kodiak Island borough manager Rick Gifford said the designation will allow a complete survey of the damage and cost of repairs, but that probably won't be done now until spring.
That will bring in both people from FEMA and from state emergency services to come in and help us evaluate the damage, put cost estimates to them. They'll take information back from the costs that we actually incurred during the event and approve those costs. And now the federal government will actually reimburse 75% of those costs, and the state will end up reimbursing 25%.
Federal funding is available to state and local governments and certain nonprofit organizations, such as Kodiak Electric Association, for emergency work. A new oil and gas company has begun operations in Cook Inlet. Cook Inlet Energy has acquired the assets that were abandoned by Pacific Energy Resources. The history of the assets shows it changed hands several times, partially due to bankruptcies. But the new owners are optimistic about the future of Cook Inlet Oil and Gas. KDLL's Ben Stanton reports.
Stewart Petroleum started the West MacArthur River unit in 1991. Forest Energy bought that unit along with Marathon's interest in Chevron's operations in Trading Bay, along with that unit and Trading Bay Field and the Cook Inlet Pipeline Company. Then they started the Osprey platform construction. Later they went bankrupt and were bought out by Forest Oil, which completed the Osprey platform and brought it online. Then Forest Oil sold to Pacific Energy, which gained Forest's assets. Later Pacific went bankrupt. J.R. Wilcox was Health and Safety Environment Manager for Pacific and Forest, and he teamed up with the former Pacific VP in charge of Alaska Operations, David Hall. The two wanted to bring the assets back online, and they had been raising capital to buy Pacific's assets by forming Cook Inlet Energy. Wilcox says Cook Inlet is a different environment than other areas of oil and gas production.
Of course, the nice thing about Cook Inlet is that, you know, we as Alaskans directly benefit from its product. You know, the gas goes to make our electricity and keep our houses warm, and the oil goes straight over to Tesoro and helps keep them in business and helps keep the the airports running, because that's how we keep the cheap fuel for the planes and what goes in our cars. And that's so unlike the North Slope, where it gets exported to the lower 48 through Valdez, Cook Inlet, you know, local needs provider.
Wilcox says the short-term goal for Cook Inlet Energy is to get the newly acquired assets back to the level they were just a few years ago. And if oil prices stay high, there's much more development to do in Cook Inlet in the long term.
We've got a few of these major oil and gas fields that were discovered, you know, back, you know, 50s and 60s that people have been drawing down. But the West MacArthur River unit and the readout unit that we'll be operating, those are fields that were developed in the 90s and this, you know, just this last decade. So we're dealing with much younger structures. And we also have a large exploration position in South Central of prospects that have never been tapped into.
Pacific had abandoned its assets in September, and Cook Inlet Energy was able to complete a sale from Pacific's estate. Wilcox says the process went quickly because of the nature of the transaction and because they had been keeping the Alaska Department of Natural Resources informed about intentions and plans. Cook Inlet Energy bought the assets last Friday, and the DNR approved them as operators on Tuesday.
And it's never happened that fast in Alaska history. I mean, when Pacific took over from Forest, it took over 18 months to do that. So, you know, in the context of what's been happening, this went remarkably well.
In total, Cook Inlet Energy now controls the West MacArthur River Unit, the West Forelands Gas Field, the Custatan Production Facility, the Osprey Platform, the Readout Unit, a 30% interest in Aurora Gas's Three Mile Creek Field, and over 600,000 acres of exploration property in South Central Alaska. The reserve purchased by Cook Inlet Energy was valued at $327 million in March of 2008. Wilcox says considering the economic conditions in the past few years and the history of the assets, he's glad his work has led to a successful transition. In Kenai, I'm Ben Stanton.
Alaska's seasonally adjusted unemployment rate for November was 8.7%, the same as October, according to the State Department of Labor. State economist Dan Robinson says Alaska's unemployment rate is up by about 2% since last year, but it hasn't changed much in 8 months.
It's been a little jittery in 2009 with probably a general upward trend, although not a lot of change since the spring. We were at 8.4% in March.
The state's unemployment rate remains below the national average, which was 10% in November. Robinson says the state lost about 7,200 jobs from October to November, mostly due to seasonal drops in construction and seafood processing. Most sectors lost some jobs, with the exception of health care and government.
Other than that, all the major sectors are down. Oil has done well for quite a while, and the declines in oil and gas aren't very big, which is one of the main reasons Alaska continues to perform relatively well compared to the country.
Robinson says Southeast is losing more jobs than other parts of the state. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an Aniak woman with a champion green thumb.
I had a pineapple growing out of the top, picked it and ate the whole thing myself. I wouldn't share it with anybody.
That's coming up. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com. The Alaska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Alaska is among 9 states being rewarded by the federal government for enrolling more uninsured children in Medicaid. Health Secretary Kathleen Sebelius says Alaska is receiving a $789,000 bonus for boosting health insurance coverage for children. The payouts were part of the Children's Health Insurance Program reauthorization signed into law in February by President Barack Obama. About 60 Juneau families are looking for new childcare options after the Valley Youth Club announced this week that it will close its doors January 29th. As KTOO's Casey Kelly reports, families will have a tough time finding replacement care.
Valley Youth Club manager Tara Ellis says she's mostly worried about what will happen to her middle school students. Many of the younger kids who go to the club could wind up in the Juneau School District's Rally program, which provides before and after school care for elementary school students. One option for older kids is the city's Zach Gordon Youth Center downtown. But Ellis says there aren't many options for kids in between.
The kids that are really missing in the gap that aren't getting the assistance that they, 100% need are the middle school children. So it's Rally, it's through, to sixth grade, and then Zach Gordon. While middle school kids are allowed, it's mainly kind of geared towards the high school.
Over the holiday break, Ellis will bring some of the middle and high school kids to Zach Gordon to see if it will work for them. She hopes they'll be more comfortable if they go with their friends. But even if they like it, Ellis says transportation is an issue.
That's another thing. Most of my families are Valley. My feeders are the Valley schools, so transportation does play a big part.
The other issue is cost. The price tag for Rally's after-school program is $286 a month for first through fifth graders and $182 a month for kindergartners. The school district's Rally supervisor, Wayne Hickson, says financial aid is available through Clinkett and Haida and other local agencies.
T&H has a daycare assistance that they provide for their members. And then Catholic Community Services also operates a state grant, which helps out with child care for people in certain income brackets.
An ad hoc group that includes former city manager Kevin Ritchie and other community members continues to seek funding that would allow the Valley Youth Club to stay open for good. The club has been operated by Juneau Youth Services since October. Previously, it was the Juneau Boys and Girls Club, but a decline in federal funding led the Alaska Boys and Girls Club to close its Juneau location in late September. Several other Boys and Girls Clubs across the state have been closed as well. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
A ribbon-cutting ceremony was held at the new Tundra Women's Shelter in Bethel yesterday. The new facility will be home to hundreds of abused women and their families seeking emergency help throughout the year. KYUK's Angela Denning Barnes reports.
Okay. All right. Thanks to everyone for coming out and celebrating with us. Here we go.
And the ribbon was cut. It was an important day for the whole YK Delta, and especially those who are close to TWC, like Matilda B., who's been working there for 9 years.
Holy cow, they're brand new and so awesome. The rooms are really nice and, wow, I can't believe it's becoming in reality.
The new shelter is 2,000 square feet larger than the old one. There are 10 shelter bedrooms instead of just 6. And the features are modern. One new room can accommodate a family with a lot of children, complete with a small kitchen and a separate bedroom. But the real difference between the old and new shelter will be in the maintenance. Nani Wong ran the old shelter for nearly 20 years. She says they always had problems with the building.
We had the sauna overflow one time. Our well went out one time. We didn't have water for 2 weeks. So we had to shovel snow and heat it up to do the dishes and stuff. Couldn't use the bathrooms. Had to dump gallons of water down. It was just horrible. Went through a lot in this building.
Even smaller problems like clients' items going missing will be better, says Alina Aluska, who has been working at TWC for several years. The old bedrooms had no locks on them, but the new ones not only have locks on their doors, they have safes inside of each closet.
Those things are not going to happen if women that come here make use of all this new stuff.
Another person at the opening was not a TWC worker, but she still remembers the old shelter. Marissa, who was afraid to give her full name, is 29 years old. She lived at the old shelter for a month and a half earlier this year, trying to escape years of abuse by her last two boyfriends.
It felt a lot crowded. There was not a lot of room to be able to walk through the hallways and not a lot of room to eat. in the living space as well as the kitchen.
Even though the old shelter was crowded, it provided her with support when she had had enough.
Being abused for years, I just got tired of just going to the, I thought I'd die just going to the hospital, and just got tired of going to the hospital. And I went to some private clinics to get checked, and I just got tired of being hurt all the time.
After staying at the shelter, Marissa moved on to the shelter's transitional housing program, where she has learned to save money and live independently while keeping a job. Having the women's shelter stay in the old building was not an option.
We were going to have to be in a more appropriate facility.
Michelle DeWitt has been the TWC executive director for about 10 years.
An example, a couple of months ago, I was in a situation where we had water pouring out of a ceiling in our business office, and just scrambling to keep up with these things that occur in a 30-year-old facility was just cost prohibitive for us.
Many people credit DeWitt with getting the new shelter. It's been her pet project for the last 4 years, and she sometimes worked 60 to 80-hour weeks in order to make it a reality.
Today's so exciting because the culmination of this project, the work that went into it, that I put in, the staff and board put in, it's so wonderful to have everyone come together and celebrate and have a chance to see it and share. And so this, to me, is such an exciting day and a fun day, and also a relief to see everything come full circle.
Funding for the new Tender Women's Coalition shelter came from several sources, including the Denali Commission, the State of Alaska, Rasmussen Foundation, Bethel Community Services Foundation, and the Paul G. Allen Foundation. At the ceremony Thursday, the local VFW Post 10,041 gave the shelter just that amount of money in a check. Although the final project amount is not yet known, the total price tag will be between $8 and $9 million. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com. And by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Fisheries students work directly with professionals in their field and enjoy hands-on learning through internships and research. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
Legislation is in the works to maintain protection for a popular recreation area north of Fairbanks. The Gold Stream Public Use Area is a 2,000-acre block of state land used for a range of outdoor activities, from bird watching to snow machining. But 1990 legislation that set it aside is scheduled to sunset in 2010. Fairbanks State Senator Joe Thomas plans to offer a bill that would re-up protection for the area.
What's at risk is the status of it could be changed by the state, or potentially the borough has zoning authority. So this is to preserve it as it was initially set out by Senator Betty Fahrenkamp and Representative Mike Davis in 1990.
Thomas says he wrote up a bill to repeal a sunset clause after hearing from numerous constituents. He says he knows of no one with development aspirations for the area, which is mostly permafrost and very wet in the summer. Many Alaskans rely on carefully stocked freezers to get them through the long winter, but Aniak resident Dee Matter takes it to a new level. Matter has three enormous freezers, two greenhouses, and a wall filled with canned goods from peaches to salsa. APRN's Annie Fite dropped by for a visit for a series on what life is like in Aniak.
Right over here, see that tree right there? I went down to California to my son, and I picked 12 branches in the spring of the year. I brought them up, and out of the 12, I got two lemon trees going. And I'm having a problem with it. It blooms, it forms a little tiny lemon fruit, and then it drops it. So I got to figure out why. That's the lemon tree. Yeah, this is the inside greenhouse. I don't particularly care for green. I like plants that bloom or end up with some kind of fruit or something. This is a pineapple. I grew a pineapple and I babysat it for about 5 years. And one day after fishing season, we came down. We had somebody coming in and watering. I came down and lo and behold, my pineapple tree or a pineapple plant had a baby. I had a pineapple growing out of the top. And I babysat that until it got to be good size. And then I picked it and ate the whole thing myself. I wouldn't share it with anybody. You were asking about subsistence. Let me show you. Okay. Here I have beets jarred. I have string beans. These are carrots. These are regular tomatoes, jarred tomatoes. This is stewed tomatoes. This is salsa. Oh, I forgot this. This is the other lemon tree right here. Down here, I have sauerkraut. I put cabbage away and make sauerkraut out of it and then in quart jars. And I put away from my garden. I put away spinach, Swiss chard, broccoli, lots of broccoli, cauliflower. This is pretty much my white man deep freeze. My husband, you know, comes from Pennsylvania, so every once in a while he hankers for, not that I eat nothing but, so there's one.
These are not small freezers.
No.
No.
Okay. This is pretty much my harvest freezer. These are my berries and cauliflower. This is my salmon. Pretty much my salmon. I keep my dried fish in here, my half-dried gamakluk fish. It's partially dried and then frozen. And then we just boil it and eat it. And heads and tails and down underneath there is more berries. So you see, I can eat for a year.
Yeah, you're not lying.
D Matter lives in Aniak. Alaska Sound Celebration, the local chapter of the Sweet Adelines, a barbershop-style women's a cappella singing group, has been working with some guest vocalists over the past 6 weeks. Tonight in Anchorage, the group will team up with other local choruses to sing some holiday tunes. Karen Leet is one of the directors of Alaska Sound Celebration. She's been singing for 20 years. She says the Sweet Adelines got started in the 50s when women wanted to get in on the fun of four-part harmony singing like men were doing in barbershop quartets. She says at least once a month, Alaska Sound Celebration sings somewhere.
We do the monthly naturalization ceremonies at the courthouse. We also do this downtown market in the summertime. We sing at baseball games in the summertime. We have a fall show. We also sing, we're singing a Christmas show this Friday. So we're always doing something.
Earlier this week, the group was rehearsing for tonight's show.
One, two!
We are the Sound
says a cappella is challenging because there are no instruments to lean on to stay in tune, but she says it's a lot of fun.
There's articles out there that singing is good for your health, and it is true. You can come in tired and dragging, come into rehearsal, but when you leave 3 hours later, you are just alive and invigorated, and if you had a stuffy nose when you leave, you're all cleared up because of the vibrations in your head when you sing. It actually, at least on me, it loosens up all that sinus congestion, and it actually helps, I think, and even it just brightens your mood, and it just makes you feel good. It's kind of addicting.
She says 10 women answered an ad inviting tryouts for the group 6 weeks ago.
And five of them are going to sing with us in the show on Friday. So this is their first, we're kind of test driving the chorus. They're going to sing with us in full makeup, costume, everything. So they're really excited about it.
Peggy McBride is also a director. She started singing with the Sourdough Chorus 18 years ago. And then she and Leet merged their groups 3 years ago. McBride says the intertwined vocals are inspiring.
There's just nothing like it in the world when you hear 80 women singing together and in perfect harmony, and it just is so exciting. But also, Sweet Adelines likes to teach. They like to teach about music. And so that, I think, is probably one of the other things that makes me love it so much, is that they're trying to bring the best out of each woman that walks in this door. You may walk in and just want to sing, but if you want an opportunity to learn to direct or to learn about better vocal production, or about how to run a show, or how to act, or how to do MC work, this is the place where you can come and learn those things.
McBride says there are Sweet Adeline groups all around the world. One of the women who signed up 6 weeks ago, Mary Barrett from Palmer, says it's been a fantastic experience.
They've been incredibly friendly and supportive. The harmony's great. I mean, I've always liked barbershop singing, and so it's been kind of crazy. I've had to memorize songs, so that's been kind of scary because I don't think I've memorized anything since high school. It's been just a lot of fun.
The group was all smiles as they practiced for this evening's show that starts at 7:30 at the Performing Arts Center in downtown Anchorage. The group will be joined by the Midnight Suns as well as the West High School Chorus.
One, two, three. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle bell rock, jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Jay Barrett in Kodiak, Ben Stanton in Kenai, Casey Kelly in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel. APRN Steve Heimel reported from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Northern Air Cargo, with scheduled flights to 16 destinations throughout Alaska every week. Northern Air Cargo, building strong relationships with the communities they serve. And by BP, teaming up with Alaskans since statehood and together looking toward a bright future. The Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance has a simple request. If you smoke, take it outside. Smoking hurts more than just you. Secondhand smoke increases the risk of coronary heart disease and kills nearly 50,000 non-smoking Americans every year. Smoking around your kids causes chronic and life-threatening diseases and is linked to sudden infant death syndrome. So if you choose to smoke, make a choice that protects others who don't. Take it outside. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. Attention hunters, you must apply now for all drawing hunts and for all Tier 1 and Tier 2 hunts in 2010 and in 2011. There is no application period in the spring of 2010. Be sure to tell hunters they can apply online until December 31st. Information online at wildlife.alaska.gov or 1-907-267-2257. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.